Well, we almost had a crisis, except Computer G saved us. I left my computer home, but there's a backup. Let's see if it has everything. We're just going to, as we did yesterday evening, cover just a few verses. And, well, let's see. Of those who were with us yesterday evening, a little review. What did we discuss yesterday evening? What some of the themes of Prahlad's prayers from yesterday evening? Yes. Simultaneous oneness and difference. Can you, a little more than that? The first emphasis was on the former, the non-difference aspect. He lists a number of things, this and that, and the other thing, and the other thing, and the other thing, and the other thing, and the other thing. They're all existing on the energy of the Supreme Lord, and therefore they're non-different than Him. And then they're different than Him, because He's the source and He's above them, and specifically mentioned as beyond the modes of nature. And therefore, I wish to take exclusive shelter of you. The understanding the absolute truth, meaning understanding that which is the source of everything, there's only one thing to do. Once one has sought that out, now, he's learned all this from Narada, and he's interested in the ways of devotional service. So now he's going to rule out other options, specifically the options of material progress. It's right in the very first verses of the Bhagavatam. There are these two systems within Vedic literature, all of religion, but within all of Vedic literature, the path of increasing material prosperity. Pravritti. Familiar with that term? Pravritti. Pravritti, increasing prosperity in this world and the next. And there's paths that help one, they encourage one to advance in your pious credits so that you can in this life prosper and the next life go to heaven. And largely, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, and it's true, largely people feel there's nothing more than that. That's the purpose of religion. And then there's nivritti. Progressively, by spiritual elevation and spiritual satisfaction and spiritual absorption, becoming detached from those things. They may be there, they may not be there. They may come, they may go. One's attention doesn't go to those things. One's attention goes to one thing, the goal of life or the supreme shelter of life, the loving relationship with the supreme, that's the primary interest. So that's Prahlad, and he's teaching the way of pure devotional service. Just go back and repeat something I've been saying almost every class. But this is chapter 9. of Canto 7. In the next chapter, 10, Prahlad says that the Supreme Lord, seeing the unnecessary suffering of living entities who are enamored by the modes of nature, covered by those modes of nature, feeling compassionate towards them, he sent me, apparently from Vaikuntha, to teach the way of pure devotional service. So there's different aspects of pure devotional service, and one of them is it's beyond the modes of nature. So he's teaching that. He's teaching it as if he's one of us, although he's not. He's a Vaikunthavasi. He's a transcendentalist. He's completely pure. But he's speaking as if he's one of us. And he's, in this section, this for this evening, he's going to speak about the opulence that his father, power, wealth, influence, fame, infamy. He had everything. He wasn't not just the top of the world, he was literally the top of the universe. He removed Indra from the position of king of heaven, and he was ruling heaven and earth. But Prahlad says in these prayers, in a moment, it was all taken from him. Smashed, finished, crushed, gone. So no thank you. There's from the Lord's side and there's from Prahlad's side. From the Lord's side, he wants to reciprocate with the love of his devotee. So he wants to give his devotee a benediction. And Prahlad knows that. Like parents of affectionate, children of affectionate parents. Parents want to do things for their children. That's one of the reasons they have children. They want to do things for their children. Who have loving parents know that. So he's ruling out, you know, please don't give me anything material. I don't want that. And he gives other explanations, but this section is specifically not wanting things of the material side. My dear Lord, people in general want to be elevated to the higher planetary systems. For a long duration of life, opulence and enjoyment. But I have seen all of these through the activities of my father. When my father was angry and he laughed sarcastically at the demigods, they were immediately vanquished simply by seeing the movements of his eyebrows. Yet my father, who was so powerful, has now been vanquished by you within a moment. Okay. So just stepping back from the message one more time. He's ruling out benedictions from Lord Nrisimhadeva that he doesn't want. But you know, the bigger instruction is the path of devotional service, or more specifically, the path of pure devotional service is the path of nivritti. But there's a good reason. It's all temporary, whether it's vanquished in a moment or it's vanquished over a long period of time. Everything of this world is temporary. So living one's life as conditioned souls do, hankering for the temporary and accumulating stuff and then getting more stuff and getting more stuff, and you're successful, how many toys you have or how much stuff you have, you get the idea without elaborating. That it's not, neither is it happiness, nor is it something that's sustainable. That's not durable. It's not what the path of pure devotional service hankers for. It doesn't mean irresponsible life, and you don't make any plan for your career and taking care of your families and all those kinds of things. But it's not with the purpose, the cultivation of pure devotional service is not with having those things, that's the standard of success and the standard of happiness. It's a sense of duty and service to the Supreme Lord. So, there's some images on the left of the heavenly planets. And he was, his father, he saw, was not only attained to heavenly planets, he was ruling the heavenly planets, but all the way up to, and even beyond, even to Brahmaloka. It's all annihilated by the time of cosmic destruction. However long the duration, one may have something, maybe a short time, medium time, long time, but it's taken by the fire of annihilation, by the benediction of Lord Brahma from his kamandalu. He sprinkled water on the body of Hiranyakashipu. It was only bones at that point in time. And he got a renewed, strong, powerful body. But that strong, powerful body was finished in a moment, as Prahlad's prayer says. So the nature of this world is sometimes happiness and sometimes distress. And that which appears to be happiness keeps us chasing after it. And after some time, that source of happiness is gone, and then there's distress. Prahlad Maharaj did not give any importance to anything in this material world. He was quite detached. That's the position of pure devotional service. No one can maintain his body or material achievements forever. A Vaishnava can understand that nothing within this material world, not even that which is powerful, opulent, or influential, can endure. At any time, such things may be vanquished. And who can vanquish them? The Supreme Personality of Godhead. This image on the screen, this is from a larger poster or an illustration of the structure of the universe and the many, many universes within the causal ocean. And the other side of the causal ocean is the Brahmajyoti. And within the Brahmajyoti is the vastness of the spiritual sky, the spiritual Vaikuntha planets and Goloka. The whole cosmology, spiritual and material. This is just showing one universe. At the bottom, there's Garbhadak ocean with Garbhadaksha Vishnu reclining on Anantashesh, and from his navel comes the lotus upon which Lord Brahma appears at the top, and then there's the 14 planetary systems in between. And then there's what's beyond, that's within one universe, and then there's beyond the universe. So anything within the universe, it comes and it goes, however long it may stay. Text 24. Therefore, Tasmat. My dear Lord, now I have complete experience. He's just a 5-year-old boy. I have complete experience concerning worldly opulence, mystic power, longevity, and other material pleasures enjoyed by all living entities from Lord Brahma down to the ant as powerful. You destroy them all. This has been a theme. We'll see this nice image again of the time factor. The time factor, it's a fascinating topic. Time not only destroys things, time brings things into being. And time continues the duration and then it's withdrawn. Time is very powerful. Have you ever seen a time somewhere? it's more elusive than an atom. No one's seen an atom either. But there's the whole science of electronics that deals with atoms and the movements of atoms and doing things with atoms. Electrons within atoms. No one's seen time. But we have some sense of time. like seconds, and so many seconds makes a minute, and so many minutes makes, there's increments of time. But time is an energy. Time is a shakti, a potency of the Supreme Lord that moves matter. It's like here we are in a house, and without time, you don't get the house. And after some time, the house is kaput. And for some time, we're here. So, it's part of life. In you can't do without it. You can't exist without it. You can't have existence without time. And what Prahlad is saying, so it's a theme woven throughout his prayers. He's really aware of the time energy. And time, I've experienced it, time destroys everything. Things that are so much valued by people, time takes it away. Therefore, because of my experience, I do not wish to possess them. He only has one request. Please place me in touch with your pure devotee and let me serve him as a sincere servant. So the phrase in the Sanskrit is nija britya parshvam. I hope it shows in the version that we have here on the screen. Nija britya parshvam. Britya means like a menial servant. And he just wants to be the menial servant of the pure devotee. Because the pure devotee, like Narada, can teach the ways of devotional service. And the ways of devotional service is the way of Swaropena Vyavastati, speaking this phrase again. I think it appears again in this purport. So the hankering, there's three. Bhukti means sense enjoyment. It's an interesting image for sense enjoyment. Bhukti and mukti. Persons aspire for liberation. And there are different methods for aspiring for liberation, but it's a hankering, it's a desire. And Siddhi, mystic powers, the fellow on the left, you recognize him? What's his name? Sobari Muni. Sobari Muni is a long story, but he wanted to engage in meditation where he wouldn't be disturbed. So he went to do his mission, so he knew how to sustain his life without air. So it's no cheating underwater, you can't breathe. But his meditation became disturbed when he saw male and female fish enjoying together, and his meditation became interrupted. Even underwater, doing very severe a type of austerity in meditation. And that other fellow was doing his headstand over there. I don't know how mystical that is, but some persons, that's their hankering, that's their aspiration. They want to achieve some kind of power. And by austerities, one can manifest some power, but it's temporary. So Prahlad Maharaj rejected all of these, bhukti mukti and mystic power siddhi. He simply wanted to engage as an apprentice under the guidance of a pure devotee, shown here as Narada. And Narada very kindly instructed Prahlad and brought him to the standard of pure devotional service, or by his mercy, he got the mercy of Lord Nrisimhadeva. So, What are you going to do? Another nice image is not here, but I like it. There's a fellow that's imitating, and he's got his back to us, and that's us. And over on one side is a child in a womb, and over on that side is another rock that shows death, and in between is life. So life is temporary. The image itself is actually a mirage. I don't know if you recognize that, but over in the backside, that's the appearance of water, but it's not water. You'll see, it's in one of the ones that you have here. Image of a mirage. In this material world, every living entity desires some future happiness, which is exactly like a mirage in the desert. Where is water in the desert? Or, in other words, where is happiness in this material world? That's what's around us. And then this body, what is its value? Merely a source of various diseases. The so-called philosophers, scientists, and politicians know this very well, but nonetheless, they aspire for temporary happiness. Happiness is very difficult to obtain, but because they are unable to control the senses, they run after the so-called happiness of the material world and never come to the right conclusion. Not a pretty picture. See, he's ruling out options. Sense gratification, liberation, mystic power, heavenly enjoyments, heavenly ruling in the heavenly planets. Now, the world around us is all of that nature, the body itself. So, why aspire for those things? He's, in earlier chapters, in the discussion that he had with his classmates, all little boys, he's saying essentially the same thing in little simpler language, little boy language. But it's the same thing. Nivritti, it's detachment from the temporary, but very, very strong attachment to the spiritual. And the strong attachment to the spiritual comes from association with Narada Muni and similar sadhu sangha strengthens one's feelings and attachment for the eternal. That's what he wants. That's his hankering. And as that is strong, the other is, it's well reasoned. It's not just I don't care. It's very thoughtful about why the detachment from other things. Prabhupada's purport, as one cannot stop a blazing fire by constantly pouring ghee upon it, one cannot satisfy oneself by increasing plans for sense enjoyment. Interesting images, huh? That's our early artists, the early stages of the BBT. The just pictures of material life, and there's a dog chewing on a bone in the lower left corner. Anyway, chapter 15, Bhagavad Gita. We've seen this image before. Largely, the attention of worldly people goes to the tree of material life, and it's likened to a banyan tree, where, interestingly, the roots grow up and the branches grow down. But there's no such tree. It's a little difficult when you look at a banyan tree to see those things that are dangling. Is it a branch that's coming down and going into the earth, or is it a root that's going up and giving nourishment to the tree? But in either case, it's of the real tree. The real tree is the existence in the spiritual realm. And it's this position of desire that gives the reflection. Just like the example of the tree that's upside down, where the, you all know this one, the roots grow up and the branches grow down. That's what you see when you look at a reflection of a tree on the in a lake, because the tree that's on the far side of the lake or river or stream or pond, then there's the reflection. So the tree that's on the bank, it's normal. The branches are growing up and the roots are going down. But you look at the reflection, it's the other way. So that reflecting surface, just like on the lake, the reflecting surface is the mind. And within the mind, there's desire. According to desire, one sees differently. One sees all these different options. Towards the top, it shows liberation. And somewhere over there is pious activities. And then sense objects and different species of life down at the lower regions. And the upper regions, there's Indra writing his Airavata elephant. It's very interesting drawing. But the difficulty is desire. Now, we've been covering this in different ways, but supposing there's no material desire. That's Prahlad. He has no material desire. Does that mean nothingness? As we were discussing nirvana, that's the goal of Buddhism. When you're on the other side of material desire, what do you have? The stage of enlightenment. And the stage of enlightenment is nirvana, where there's cessation of material desire, cessation of material existence. So when there's cessation of material existence, what's left? Nirvana. Prahlad is not teaching that kind of negation. He's teaching while there's not attraction for the temporary, there's strong attraction for the eternal. The eternal service to the Supreme Lord, that he's appealing for association with saintly persons who are situated there, that then can engage him in service to Radha and Krishna, or the Supreme Lord in the spiritual realm. So, we know, those of we've been involved in Krishna consciousness, we know that's the goal, but, or and yet, there's this lingering allure for the temporary. We know, but the strong affinity is there for continuing to be the enjoyer of the temporary. What to do? Well, one of the things to do is you go sit at the feet of Prahlad Maharaj, who is at the feet of Narada Muni, and we hear from Prahlad Maharaj. Because although he's a little boy, he's really clear. He's a worldly little boy. He's thoroughly experienced in these matters. Now, we're a little older than 5 years, each of us, most of us anyway. And we've had our own experience of seeing the temporary. And we've had our experience of hearing from great souls, like our founder Acharya. But it somehow didn't go in quite the same way that it went in with Prahlad. So hearing from him can help us go beyond the lingering affinity for the temporary. It doesn't go easily. But the power of bhakti is such that it can go and be replaced with attraction for the eternal. So here's Prabhupada's purport. Rather, we have to follow the instructions of Lord Krishna. Sarvadharmam paridyaja mamekam sharanam braja. Then we shall be happy. Otherwise, in the name of happiness, we shall continue to suffer miserable conditions. We don't want that. And there's a very nice painting, Lord Nrisimhadeva with one of his hands on Prahlad's head, and Prahlad's offering these wonderful prayers. O my Lord, O Supreme, because I was born in a family full of the hellish material qualities of passion and ignorance, what is my position? And what is to be said of your causeless mercy, which was never offered even to Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, or the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi? You never put your lotus hand upon their heads, but you put it upon mine. So the goddess of fortune, she's always at his feet. Of course, he has long arms, he could reach her head, but he doesn't do that. He extends his feet for her to worship. But there's a very special, 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 special favor shown in the lower left corner with the hand of Lord Nrisimhadeva being placed upon his head. And we heard earlier in verse 7 of this chapter that by the touch of the Lord's hand, Prahlad became completely purified. All material attraction gone, all material contamination gone. The causeless mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead may be bestowed upon anyone, regardless of his position in this world. Everyone is eligible to worship the Supreme Lord, irrespective of his material position. Now, going back, I may have already, maybe going into the next section already. Those of you that were with us from the very, very beginning, in chapter 6, in that the section where Prabhupada gives an introduction to the chapter, he says two things, that Prahlad has come into this world to teach the way of the language he uses, something spiritual activity, standard or the way of life of pure devotional service, essentially. And one who lives by that method can achieve the full mercy of the Personality of Godhead, although the emphasis is upon without any requirement of material qualification. I'm not doing a very good job of repeating Prabhupada's words. But there's two main elements in Prahlad's the theme or the message of Prahlad. And one is devotional service is not mixed. And the other is there's no material qualification to get there. It's not piety. It's not good birth. It's not you have a keen intellect. It's not you're very beautiful. Or it's not you're very rich. Or it's not, there's no material qualification. And again and again and again, Prahlad is reminding us, he has these disqualifications. Born in demoniac family, filled with ignorance and passion, everybody, and that's the way that he's grown up, and nasty people, and I'm just a little boy, I haven't even begun my education properly, and I don't have material qualification. I have disqualification. But the mercy of the Supreme Lord has come to me. And that has made me qualified. And that mercy has come through Narada's association. So I want Narada's association. Please. The image on the left is intended to illustrate the four types of pious people who render service to Krishna. Those who are in distress, those that are searching for wealth, those that are curious, and those that want knowledge of the absolute truth. Those are the four types of pious people, and they have some motivation. They want, or they want, or they want, or they want. They want something. So Krishna gives access to himself, regardless of one's position in the material world. And even in the right-hand side is Draupadi. Even she's in great difficulty. Krishna doesn't only give his association to those in difficulty, or not give association to persons who are in great difficulty. From the message is, from Krishna's association, there's no material prerequisite or material disqualifier. Ahoitakiya pratiyata, in the language of the Bhagavatam. There's no material cause, there's no material impediment. Bhakti stands alone. We'll say it the same thing in a different way. There's nothing on this side that you need to have in place before bhakti can begin. There's nothing on that side that can stop bhakti. There's no material cause and no material impediment. It stands on its own. It's independent as Krishna is independent. And when it gets the mercy of Narada-like persons, then one is introduced to bhakti. And when you're introduced to bhakti, there's not some prerequisite on the material side to get the fullness of Krishna's mercy. One gets the causeless mercy of the Lord through devotional service or bhakti. This is from the purport. Prabhupada refers to the verse from Bhagavad Gita chapter 14. Mam cha yogya vicharina. One who engages in full devotional service, who does not fall down in any circumstance, at once transcends the modes of material nature and thus comes to the level of Brahman. Prabhupada writes, Prahlad Maharaj, being a great devotee, thought the body born of his father to be born of passion and ignorance. But because Prahlad was fully engaged in the service of the Lord, his body did not belong to the material world. Nice. This is an explanation of how one can go beyond material disqualification, because it's a fact. Being born the son of Hiranyakashipu, that's not auspicious. However, so he's likening himself to one who is unfortunate and unqualified. But the fact of the, Prabhupada's making the point, the fact of the matter is, his body no longer has those qualities because of the influence of devotional service. The influence of devotional service is likened in different ways. It's likened to taking an iron rod and putting an iron rod in fire. When you put an iron rod in fire, it gets hot. And keep it there and it gets hotter and hotter and red hot. Take it out of the fire and act like fire. So, same as an iron rod becomes fire, not just fire-like, but literally it becomes fire. The material body, although it's material, can act in a spiritual way by the power of bhakti, the power of devotional service. Our bodies can become spiritualized. Or paraphernalia that's used in worship of the deity. It's like we offer a flower and then we pass the flower around. It's just a flower. It's material. Because it's been offered to the Supreme Lord, it has a spiritualizing effect. Or flame. Or so ghee lamp. Or your arti bell. Because it's used in the service of the Supreme Lord, it's just metal. But it becomes tadiya or paraphernalia. When the articles that are used in the worship of the deity, that the crown of Kishore or Kishori, and their garlands and the decorations that are used for worshipping them, by offering them to the Supreme Lord in his consort, they become paraphernalia that's worshipable. One can worship them. I don't know if you've noticed on the Chicago Temple altar in front of Lord Jagannath, there's this, looks like a Shila. You noticed before? You know, it's from a Nrisimha temple. It's a stone from a Nrisimha temple. It's Tadiya. It's not Lord Nrisimhadev. It's just a stone. But it's worshipable. Like, you know, dust from Vrindavan. It's Tadiya. It's paraphernalia of the Supreme Lord. It's the same as him. Govardhan Shila, etc. So the body of Prahlad had its disqualification being born in the son of Hiranyakashipu, but because of devotional service, it was no longer limited or contaminated or influenced by the modes of nature. He's completely beyond the modes of nature. Similarly, the so-called material bodies of devotees who fully engage in devotional service of the Lord, being constantly in the fire of spiritual life, have nothing to do with matter, but are spiritualized. I've already explained it. It's an interesting illustration. I've never seen cannonballs before, but there are some cannonballs. And there's cannonballs that are in a fire. I don't know who puts cannonballs in a fire, but in contact with fire, they become fire. Bodies become spiritualized. Things of this world become spiritualized by contact with devotional service. The Mridanga drum is just whatever the material, the car tells. It's sacred because it's being used in the service of Supreme Lord. Anyone who engages in continuous devotional service to the Lord is situated in the spiritual world and has nothing to do with the material qualities, the three modes of nature. Bhakti is very powerful. Even within this world, we can be transported out of this world. Devotional service is so great that when it is offered even by those born in low families, the Lord accepts it as being more valuable than the service offered by the goddess of fortune. That's what Prahlad is saying. Devotees enjoy life under any circumstances. Paratak, Svatak, Karmatak. As he acts himself, as he is instructed by others, or as he performs his material activities, he enjoys in every respect. This little phrase, Paratak, Svatak, Karmatak, it's taken from a statement that Prahlad made earlier to Hiranyakashipu. When Hiranyakashipu wanted to know what's the best thing that you've learned, he asked that a couple of times. And Prahlad says, you know what? A person that's so attached to the bodily conception of life like you can't be helped to understand anything good. Really very straightforward. Either by instruction from others, by your own effort, or a combination of the two. You're not going to understand, so what's the point of telling you something that's good to know? By your own effort, by instruction of others, or a combination. Okay, that's the next section. The message here is the supremacy of bhakti and the supremacy of bhakti over material elevation, the supremacy of bhakti that says you don't require anything material, his detachment from affinity for matter. So it parallels, the language is different, But it very much parallels the prayers of Lord Brahma. Not surprised, because Brahma, Narada, and Prahlad, they're in the disciplic succession. Almost the same message, language is different, but Brahma says the same thing to Krishna in his prayers. 10th canto, chapter 14. The insufficiency of any material happiness and the fleeting nature of it, and the object is then gone, and then one laments. It's similarly comparing the path of Gyan. It's so insufficient. Path of Karma, the path of Gyan, what's left? The path of Bhakti. And the path of Bhakti is so powerful. We heard this earlier from Prahlad as well. The supremacy of Bhakti. He's a Bhakta. And he understands why. And he's not attracted to anything else. He's quite detached from anything else. And is supported by these different items of knowledge. Teaching the ways of pure devotional service exactly as he was supposed to do. That's what he's doing. And he's doing it in the form of nice prayers. Okay. Any discussion? You three boys in the back, congratulations. You sat through the whole session and were very peaceful. Yes? Yeah. So what's the question?
The question is, why is it too hard for me to...
Why is it so hard for me?
To get that kind of realization.
Well, these are very exceptional personalities. They're Bhagavatam caliber personalities. And well, for example, Prahlad was sent from Vaikuntha. Narada knew, while still in the womb, of his mother. He's a very special devotee. So even before he heard from Narada, he was already a very special devotee. And then he heard from Narada. And he took his birth filled with the knowledge that he heard within the womb. But he was so... Dhruva, he had a motivation that was very strong, a Kshatriya motivation, a chivalry spirit, Kshatriya chivalrous spirit, and he wanted to. So, his determination carried him through receiving Narada's association to a very quick standard of spiritual progress. We're a little slower. But that's due to attachment. You've heard me say this before, probably. Prabhupada, a reporter asked Srila Prabhupada, how long does it take? You speak of Krishna consciousness. How long does it take to become Krishna conscious? Prabhupada's immediate reply was, less than a moment. And in that less moment, just two things. The attraction for sense gratification, you give it up. And the tendency to try to know things through mental speculation, you give it up. Then he said, generally people are attached to these two things, and therefore generally the process is gradual. So the answer to your one answer to your question is we're attached to the temporary. And it's hard for us to let go. We can let go a little bit, and progressively a little bit more maybe, but the retardant for spiritual progress is attachment to the temporary, the mood of being an enjoyer of the temporary.
Is there any difference in what Prahlad Maharaj and Dhruva Maharaj, they are the mercy what they got? And the mercy what we are getting now, is
that
different or is it the same?
Same. Does the sun shine differently in different places? It shines equally. Now, they were eager to receive. There's a really beautiful way that this is described in Brahma's prayers. But as the... It's hard to repeat it because it's so elegant and, but the sun reflects in the Suryakanta stone. It's a gem that not just reflects light, but it absorbs light. But the sun, the light of the sun is where that light comes from, the stone. Anyway, different objects interact with the sun different ways, but the sun is equal to everyone in every place. Yeah, it speaks of the thieves. They come when there's no light, because that's when they can do their stealing. Anyway, different persons relate to and interact with the sun in different ways, but it's not the sun shines in a different capacity for different persons.
One of the statements over the devotions is so great that when it is offered to him by somebody born in a lower family, the Lord accepts it being more valuable than offered by the... So my question is that why that should be compared with the service offered by Goddess of Fortune? Because that is one of the highest states.
Well, it's not just highest state. She's the internal... She's his potency.
Exactly, and then how, there can't be anything beyond that, right? She is internal potency, how even devotional service can go beyond that?
Well, if the Lord wants to, he can do anything. It's an exhibition of love that he shows to Prahlad, even though his birth is low. Because he's pure in his devotion. So he shows a kind of mercy to Prahlad that he doesn't show to her. It's a different relationship. She's at his feet, serving his feet, not placing his hand on her head. But Prahlad is a little boy, affectionate little boy, he pats him on the head. He just takes it as some special mercy that even the Goddess of Fortune hasn't received. And with that special mercy came something very special. His eloquence, although he's not educated, he's speaking very eloquently and very elevatedly, very beautifully, with no taint of attraction for the temporary. Now that's not to say, Goddess of Fortune has that. She's not attracted to anything temporary. But so he is a recipient of mercy in a very, very unique and special way. That's it as far as I understand it. Anything else? Yes?
Question is not related to this, but in general, in this material world that you are living in, karmically, materially, if you do something, you will see a result, a tangible material result. And because of that, we get motivation to do, not we, anybody, motivation to do the next thing. That's how the life progresses. You study, you get it. So, but in devotional life,
it's not fruitive.
You can't really see, but it is there, but we cannot experience with this. How we can explain our, I don't want to use the convinced word, but how to comprehend all these things and make sense, Maharaj? Because it is very difficult to see, bhakti is giving me this. I work, I get money. But when I do chanting, years, it may not manifest. It may manifest. But most of the time it doesn't manifest for the 99% of the people.
Well, I don't agree with your premise. I don't agree. That someone's speaking? Oh, I see. I partially agree that what's fruitive about chanting japa? Because we're as you described, we're prone to, we're conditioned by do something to get something. When you're chanting japa, what's the fruitive thing, the tangible thing that you get? You're so distracted. One of the reasons why the mind is distracted, because it's not of the same type, it's not fruitive. In general, motive goodness activities are like that as well, which to speak of transcendental activity. I mean, regulation or cleanliness or truthfulness or things, or compassion, things that are of the quality of goodness. The happiness is not a fruitive kind, that's passion. It's a contentment kind. It's another conditioning. The one to speak of transcendental, like chanting, or performing arti, or offering your food instead of not offering your food. You know, an act of devotion. It's not fruitive. It's spiritual. But, so, I agree in that sense it's not fruitive. But there's something that you can experience. It's palpable. It's tangible in that sense. The quality of life changes from a life of devotion. The world around you doesn't necessarily change, but the way you experience the world around you changes by spiritual consciousness. That the It's tangible and palpable. I just got Well, some messages from devotees that attended this whatever they called it, the kirtan in Dallas. Kirtan 50. What was the 50 about?
They do like 50 hours.
50 hours.
They start in two different
forms. Okay. Okay. Some young people that are living in Texas went there, and you know, really good experience. Or any you know any sadhu sangha function, and we come together, and we just as we did this past weekend in Chicago, or before, anyway, whatever the experience, come together and absorb yourself in spiritual activity together. It's tangible. One feels something. So it's not fruitive, but you feel something. Now the limitation is we're attached. The modes of nature are acting upon us, and until we become free from the modes of nature, that experience then dissipates, at least to some degree. But it gives us the experience of there's a higher consciousness, there's a higher reality. And as one continues progressing spiritually, that becomes your reality. It's not fruitive. It helps you become clearer in doing your work or your study or your social interact. It changes the quality of life and the effectiveness in meeting challenges and addressing them in a calm and thoughtful and clear-headed way. It's not fruitive, it's spiritual. And so people that want it requires wanting spiritual reality. So it's the impetus is coming closer to spiritual reality and leaving behind the illusion. It's not fruitive, but it's spiritual. And the spiritual intelligence becomes enlivened, the heart becomes softer, the mind becomes clearer and more focused. Not fruitive, but it's spiritual. So those that want that, it's impetus, not fruitive. Then comes the other challenge of how to address the things that are fruitive and transform them into spiritual. The doing something to earn some money and what money can buy, and so, okay, now we have a house. When you're, yeah, anyway, without all the detail, going to college and working hard for so many years so you get a job so you can get a house. Now you got the house. So now how do we, now that we're devotees, how do we see the house and the family and, you know, the car and the stuff in a way that's not entangling, but it's, we don't just throw it away either. We have to spiritualize. But that's a privilege that persons that don't have bhakti won't even think about what to speak of access to. So it's a gradual, similar to this earlier question, it's a gradual process because we're attached, but it's palpable. It's priceless. It's spiritual. Okay, I don't see anyone else ready to say something.
It's a weird question. It's bothering me for a long time.
Uh-oh.
But I'll try.
Okay.
So my understanding is we have a body and we have a soul.
We are a soul. Now we have a soul. It's a difference. Yeah.
We have two, soul and super soul. So every living entity has a soul and a super soul.
No, let's change the language. Every living entity is a soul. We don't have a soul. That's who we are. We're the soul. I'm just changing the language. It's important. Language is important. Okay, okay.
So, every living entity is a soul.
Yes.
And this super soul is next in the body.
Yes.
So, this body contains so many bodies, germs. They are also living entities.
Yes, that's correct.
So, each germ has a super soul.
That's correct.
So, entire body is mixed up all super souls.
Yeah.
No.
Well, let's follow that. I don't know what medical science says how many microorganisms there are within the body, but some large number, and however many of those there are, there's a super soul. But it's one super soul. Let's just do it this way. Within the room, there is however many people, 20, 25, whatever it is, 30, whatever the number is. There's that many souls, but there's one super soul. So one super soul variously manifests. It's one super soul. Now go to one body, within one body, however many living entities, microorganisms or bacteria or whatever else. It's one super soul. Variously situated. The example, you know the example, it's the sun shining on pots of water. It's one sun, reflected on different pots of water, but it's one sun. Super soul is one.
So basically, in this body, there are so many souls, including our soul.
Yes. And we're conscious of the soul that's us, and distinct from the microorganism souls, is consciousness has evolved to the point where we're conscious of the whole body. The consciousness of the soul that is us is permeating the whole body, like the sun's rays permeates, you know, the solar system. Consciousness of the soul that's us has evolved to the stage, it's less covered, to the stage where we're conscious of the body. Whereas the other souls that are in those microorganisms and bacteria and other things, they're conscious of their little body, not the whole thing. Their consciousness is reduced, our consciousness is expanded. But it's one super soul. Well, they're part and parcel of Krishna too. All those other souls that are living within this body.
Like how we are conscious of our body being individual souls.
Yeah.
Like Krishna, super soul, is conscious of all souls.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Does that answer your question? I'm not exactly sure what your question is, but does it answer your question?
Yeah, that's awesome.
Fantastic. Okay. Looks like we're done. Anything? Any other left field questions here? Okay. I just want to say one thing. This section is something that I started with at the very beginning, but this section of the Bhagavatam is renowned because it includes many, many, many things that are essences, and because it's essences, it's important to understand the details of it, or you know, the message that Prahlad is presenting, because it's foundational for the whole of the life of bhakti. He's come to teach the way of pure devotional service, so that it makes it really important for us, as best we can, to understand the subtleties and the force of the message that he's giving. Because it'll help us, like discussed before, to go beyond this continuing seed of attraction for the temporary. Because that's got us stuck here. Although we know better. We know the philosophy, and we're still where we are. We're not It's to help us, understanding his messages will help us get to that stage. That's all. Hare Krishna. Now it's Mahaprasadam time.